Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
You're not Ryan Recker.
I am not Ryan Recker. In fact, all of you disappointed people out there are listening to Hancock and Kelly. We usually are on Friday mornings in for Charlie Brennan. We fill in occasionally for Mark Reardon as well. I think we're going to be here Thursday for Mark Reardon this week.
The only time we are typically on the air when the sun's not up
is election night.
Is election night.
That is correct, because we're the political guys. We're going to do a little politics tonight. But we've got a horde of topics that we're going to cover.
A horde of topics.
We've done an amazing amount of preparation for this broadcast, Michael, and for the three of you out there listening, we're gonna give you all we got.
What'd you do differently today? That typically we're on in the morning or the afternoon.
Yeah.
I don't know about you, but I'm usually about an hour and a half into sleeping by now.
Yeah, I meant to take a nap today, but I couldn't. I didn't, and I slept in a little bit this morning.
Right.
So we were out late last night, but. Hopefully, it's just three short hours, and poof, they'll be gone like
well,
that.
Well, on the nights I can't fall asleep, I have on my phone this radio.com app, and I listen to Ryan.
Ryan Recker.
I love the callers that Ryan Recker gets.
We do love the callers.
So I'm hopeful that we, too, will get all the callers that Ryan Recker typically gets when he sits in
from
here.
From all over the country.
Right?
And parts of Canada.
The power of Camo X on full display.
So we are, some of you probably know about us, but if you don't know about us, we are political people. I'm a Republican, and Michael over there is a Democrat. We met each other in 2002, and at that time, I was the executive director of the Missouri Republican Party, and Michael?
I was the executive director of the Democratic Party. I crashed a press conference you were having.
Yes.
Right there in front of the Ronald Reagan
Republican Center
in Jefferson City. That was back when the Republican Party used to follow the principles of Ronald Reagan. You guys name stuff after
him. I remember we used to always have to come up with things for the state committee to do, because we didn't want them doing anything too controversial.
Yeah, we see what happens when you let them off the hook.
And so one year we passed a resolution that we were going to rename our building. This was a junky old building right there on East Dunklin.
It was.
Junky building. I slept in there for three nights a week for 4 years. I had a little shower in the basement. But anyway, we were going to rename the building the Ronald Reagan Republican Center. So we got the resolution passed. We got somebody to sponsor it. And we had a debate on the floor of the state committee meeting.
What was the debate? Were they wanting somebody else's name?
No, it passed 68-0, as I recall. So I was then charged with finding an appropriate, signage for the Ronald Reagan Republicans. I didn't know anything.
So what'd you do? Call up a sign company that prints up your vote for Mel, whoever signs?
One of our donors in Nottoway County. It's in northwest Missouri. He's in the monument business.
What does that mean? The headstone business?
Tombstones.
Tombstones.
So
I see where this is going.
So I called him up. I said, hey, it's Hancock down here at the state party. I'm trying to find an inexpensive, we need to put some signage up here for the Ronald Reagan Republicans. He said, I'd be delighted to do that. So he
put you together a little.
He put a headstone together, and it was it wasn't Here Lies Ronald, it just said Ronald Reagan Republican. He said, I'll have it shipped to you. I said, great. So they deliver it, and it takes four guys to carry this thing in. They bring it in the front door. They drop it in the lobby. And we signed for it. And I said, okay, guys, let's go put this up. Couldn't move the thing.
Too heavy.
You couldn't move the thing.
Right.
Finally, we got it out. We got it on the front there. And it was, I don't think it was up yet when you crashed my press conference back in 2002. This is probably a two. It might have been, actually. Because that was back at the time they were naming everything after Ronald Reagan. And so we did it as well. And I think we moved out of that office 10 years
ago. Yeah, where's that headstone?
Well, I think it might still be there because I don't know who would move it. it was granite, buddy. It was solid granite. And
so did it have the date of birth,
no,
date of death?
No, it was not a tombstone.
Well, it is. What do you mean it wasn't a tombstone? You just sat and told a 5-minute story about a tombstone.
Well, it wasn't. It was signage.
Oh, okay.
And, I think we paid $700 for that thing.
Yeah. So, well, just to have that sucker shipped to you must have been expensive.
Yeah. It was. We about killed ourselves putting it in. And so anyway, if I can't remember the name of the company, but there can't be too many monument making companies in Nottoway County. So I would recommend them highly to any of you if you're looking for such a thing.
Let me segue here for a second. I was out with my mother today. We were riding in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
You know what I saw on a Sunday?
What?
The United States Post Office was delivering packages on a Sunday.
Huh.
It was the United States Post Office. I thought nothing happened.
Well,
with
so
the
you
mail
got the,
on
so the
Sunday.
USPS, they're now in competition with FedEx and all the
right,
Amazon.
Of course, right.
So, in order to serve their customers out there, sometimes they have to deliver.
I did
on
not
a Sunday.
Realize yeah. that. That well, that's cool. Well, anyway, so you didn't have it delivered on a Sunday. It probably would have cost you more.
No,
that
it came during the week,
delivered.
As I recall. It's been a few years ago, but anyway, all of that is to say, Michael crashed my press conference, and then a couple weeks later, I crashed his press conference. And then we had to debate each other right before the election, right. And we did, and we got to visiting afterwards, found out we actually had a fair amount in common, and then in 2008, the Mark Reardon Show here at the Voice of St. Louis, they have the roundtable on Fridays.
Uh-huh. It started with
two
us.
2 to 3. Well, no, it was going on before us. But they called me to be the Republican, and they couldn't find a Democrat to come on because, you know, Mark has...
Right.
You know,
no Democrats would go on with Mark.
So I said, well, let's call my buddy. You know, at that time, you weren't really my buddy. We just kind of knew each other.
Mm-hmm.
So you came on. We did the roundtable. A couple weeks later, we did the roundtable. A couple weeks later, we did the roundtable. We ended up coming in every week throughout the 2008 election.
It was a good year for us.
And doing a segment on the election with Mark. And then we were asked to fill in, and so that was, 11 years ago, and we've been doing this thing. And in the meantime, we have become the very best of friends.
Well, we really have. That's the one thing that it angers a lot of my friends, that you're my pal.
Yeah, my people can't understand it
either. Yeah, but we have become the best of friends, and John is one of those people who's been a part of every aspect of my life, both good and bad. I lost my father in the last year, and one of the first people... that I talked to throughout that process is my good buddy John Hancock.
It was in
Hancock.
October, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's October 27th.
Wow.
Coming up on a year.
Yeah.
But we've been there. We've been through it together.
Yep.
And, you know, besides having the most misguided political belief system of anybody I've ever met, especially considering your upbringing, you are one of the most perfect human beings I know.
You are a magnificent human being yourself, Kelly. And, well, that's enough kumbaya. When
right.
we come back... Michael thinks President Trump should be impeached.
You're doggone right.
I think he is dead wrong.
Well,
we'll talk about
agrees.
It. Take your calls right here on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Hey, it's Hancock and Kelly in for Ryan Recker on Overnight America here on KMOX. So, gentlemen, I have taken care of one of the most important components of the day.
Is that the pizza?
The pizza. Please stand by. Yeah.
All right. Michael's answering the phone, and the pizza hopefully has arrived. And so he's on the radio, and he's telling them to keep the – now, if the pizza is hot, maybe Ben can go get the pizza.
Well, we have taken care of the pizza. It should be here in the next minute or two, and I'll go down and get it.
Sounds
good.
But
we're going to cheat on the diet.
All right.
Well, speaking of the diet, did you know I weigh in at a svelte 225 right now?
Good for you.
Technically, I'm the same weight as the President of the United States, right?
Yes.
That's what they say. Boy, oh boy, he's getting bigger and bigger every time I see him.
Well,
John, the president's in deep trouble. You would agree, right? I mean,
he's got trouble. But I don't know how deep it is.
Well, he's going to be impeached. We can both agree on that.
By the House, I think.
Right.
That's
well,
correct.
But impeachment is simply the articles that vote
indictment.
For an indictment.
And if you got 218 votes in the House,
you can impeach anybody.
Now,
of course, the last person we impeached was Bill Clinton. We did that because he lied under oath, correct?
Correct. That is correct.
Donald Trump. Not to mention his near breaking of the, help me out with the.
The Emoluments Clause.
The Emoluments
he
Clause.
Didn't break the emoluments clause.
Well, he didn't do it because he withheld his no-bid contract to himself for the G7 summit to be down there at Doral. Which whether or not he was really going to do it, I guess is a debate we could talk a little bit about later.
I think that the whole thing was a smokescreen for whatever reason to divert attention from something else. It was my guess. I never thought that they were actually going to hold the G7 at the Doral.
Well, so it's my party, John, as you know, since almost day one. I mean, I think we were all shell-shocked, including Republicans and all analysts, that Donald Trump had won the presidency. If you remember, I mean, we all expected, most people expected a Hillary Clinton landslide.
I recall on election night here on the Voice of St. Louis.
Oh, you're going to call what you recall what you predicted on election night? Way to go out on a limb.
No, I mean, early in the evening, I said I thought there was a potentially.
Outside chance.
I expected Hillary Clinton to win.
Yeah.
But I thought there was a path that Donald Trump could put together the electoral votes. And I outlined pretty much exactly what happened. And nobody saw. I think folks generally thought Pennsylvania was in play, but I don't think anybody really thought Michigan was for real, and nobody saw Wisconsin coming. I thought the president had a shot at Nevada. That didn't happen. I thought he had a shot at New Hampshire. That didn't happen. He did capture the one electoral vote in the second congressional district in Maine. I thought he would take that. And it basically was a perfectly executed inside straight. But we digress.
Right. But Democrats, since that day, I mean, they were shell-shocked. They just, like, this man who didn't release his taxes and so many lies we had seen during the campaign that we all now have realized to be true, that he was just lying on everything, including whether or not Mexico was going to pay for the wall, right? Remember that one?
I do.
That was one of his big lines. Remember, what are we going to do? We're going to build a wall. Who's going to pay for it?
You know,
Mexico!
If you look at Donald Trump, though, from a historical perspective, in terms of promise-keeping, he's got one of the better records of any president as far as keeping the promises he made. Now, the Mexico paying for the wall thing, I never considered that real.
But that was the basis of his campaign. Right. We can agree, right?
Yeah,
and he was going to pay off the deficit, right? In 6 years,
well,
it was going to be paid off.
He was going to eliminate the annual deficit.
Yeah, that never happened. Well, then we get to this most recent act, which truly is an impeachable offense, John, where he engaged in a conversation with the president of Ukraine about some debunked information as it related to Hillary's server, laid out three things that he wanted to have done for him prior to him releasing several $100 million of security stuff and what would be a quid pro quo. Well, of course, the president announces it was never a quid pro quo, never any quid pro quo. We had tons of lifetime bureaucrats, not tons, several lifetime bureaucrats step up, point out that this is wrong, show what's going on. Then the president's chief of staff takes to the podium at the White House and co-signs the Donald Trump confessional, saying that's exactly what we did. A complete and utter violation of the law, definitely qualifying as high crimes and misdemeanors. And it is time for this process to begin and move forward. The rule of the law is what's important in this country, John Hancock. I remember you reiterating that to me several times during the Obama administration. You seem to have forgotten about that.
314-436-7900, 1-800-925-1120. Let me explain precisely why you're wrong. What happened on that phone call between the president of the United States and the president of Ukraine is the president of the United States asked the president of Ukraine to look into reports.
His political rival.
The reports that there were Ukrainians involved in stealing the DNC's server. Now, those reports, our intelligence community, our State Department, do not believe that there is a server sitting in the Ukraine somewhere. In fact, they don't believe that the server was ever physically removed from the Democratic National Committee headquarters. However, it's entirely the president's prerogative. If he believes that there's a foreign country was interfering in our elections in 2016, it's entirely.
But that's not what he was doing, John.
For him to do that, he also asked them to look into the Hunter Biden situation, which he should not have done, in my opinion.
Right
now,
then 2 weeks later,
they released the aid.
They released the money,
correct,
realizing that what the president had done was illegal.
No, you ask yourself, does that conversation rise to an impeachable offense? It simply does not. It's not a high crime. It's not a misdemeanor.
What happened to the grand old party?
Nothing was done there that significantly affected anything in terms of our foreign policy. And if that's all that this is, First of all, if that's all that this is, and if the Democrats think it's impeachable, they ought to impeach him right now.
But how do we know that that's all that this is? John, every time the White House opens its mouth or the president has one of his walk to the helicopter press conferences, he gives more and more evidence to the House Democrats to move forward with their impeachment. I mean, who would have thought that the White House chief of staff, John, would take to the podium, a rarely used podium anymore. So not only was it a place where he shows up, where we're supposed to talk to the press, this is an administration that doesn't talk to the press. And what does he do? He admits fully to what the president and the administration is denying. This isn't some low-level staffer, John. This is the chief of staff to the president of the United States.
He never said that the quid pro quo was the Hunter Biden situation. If you go back and listen to what Mulvaney said, he was talking about it in the context of investigating the Ukrainian involvement in the 2016 elections. There is nothing untoward about that. There's nothing illegal about that. There's nothing even unethical about that. The Biden thing, I will grant you, was wrong. But
It's not an
impeachable offense. I mean, it is if you got 218 votes, but there is no way this president's going to be removed from office over that.
All right, here we go, folks. 314-436-7900, 1-800-925-1120. Do you buy into the splitting hairs thought process of John Hancock, or do you buy into the rule of law thought process of Michael Kelly? John, you and so many Republicans are having to carry water for a not a good human being. This man is not a person who tells the truth.
Let me have a little sip of water.
He's not reflective of the conservative values that so many of you have always valued in the grand old party. And it is hard to sit and watch this charade. Now, look, everybody's praising Mitt Romney right now for being a man that's got a solid backbone. And I do give him his credit for standing up and finally being a voice of reason in the Republican Party.
You're talking about the great Pierre Delecto?
Well, we're going to get to that. But he's, you know, standing up and speaking out against the actions that's taken place with this party. And I think I anticipate more are going to follow, John. This is what's happening with the Republican Party is so sad to watch. It used to be a party that stood for the rule of law.
One that stood for
the conservative values and wasn't it the Christian values of telling
for
the
conservative
truth?
Values. And if you look
standing
at the,
for our country,
if you look at the judicial
the party of Ronald Reagan that brought down communism, who's now allowing the communists to take back over the world and become the leader. I mean, I don't get what happened to my friends that have conservative values, conservative thought process, and what I thought were decent Republicans. What happened to you
guys? On balance, Donald Trump has made the best and most penetrating judicial appointments of any president in my lifetime. And, you know, that's just the way it is. So let's see what old Leo has to say. Leo, you're on KMOX.
Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
My first question is, Mr. Hancock, do you realize that you have in my opinion, a tell in your voice when you are just strictly defending the party line and not really speaking your own thoughts?
A tell in my
voice. You have a difference in the tonality that you put across. I don't know if Mr. Kelly, who's staring at you, can see it in your eyes or not, but if you go back and listen to a lot of your tapes,
fascinating.
When you are not speaking sincerely, you have a different tone in your voice.
Well, listen, Leo, if you had to defend the nonsense that's coming out of this administration and the behavior of this president, wouldn't you kind of have a tell in your voice, too?
I absolutely would.
Thanks for the call, guy.
That's tipping pitches if you're a baseball pitcher.
Why was I afraid of this late night crowd,
you,
man?
Yeah.
Our first call, a person who's standing for the rule of law, agreeing with Kelly.
I'm gonna remove the tell in my voice as we go to break. We may have a little pizza in here when we come back, and we'll get down to it right here on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Hancock and Kelly sitting in for Ryan Recker in Overnight America. So, John, Leo tells me you have a tell in your voice.
Hello,
what's that
Michael.
Mean?
Hello, Michael.
Hello.
I don't know what a tell in my voice would tell, but apparently you can tell when I'm talking that I don't really believe what I'm saying.
True. Well, that's kind of obvious. I mean, anybody who's having to defend the things you're defending,
you
probably...
Hey, you know, actually, I mean, I consider myself one of the more honest brokers when it comes to Donald Trump. I praise him when I think he's done well. I criticize him. I mean, I don't know if Leo heard me go off on the Syria decision, but I went off on the Syria decision. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I try and call it down the middle.
Balls and strikes.
I like a lot of what Donald Trump has done. I think if you look at the economy, it's benefited.
How about the spending?
From the spending's bad.
How bad?
It's really
bad. Tragic bad, isn't it?
Well, it's going to be. You know, someday we're going to.
This was rates that Barack Obama was spending at, and you were giving anecdotes of doom and end of the world, et cetera. I haven't heard any of that lately.
Oh, no. The national debt in this country at some point is going to bite us in the rear. There's just no question about it. And it is. And this president has added to that debt precipitously, as had Barack Obama, as had George W. Bush before him. And part of the problem with Trump is that he made it clear from the get-go that he didn't want to make any changes to the entitlement programs, mm-hmm. Social Security, Medicare, mm-hmm. Medicaid. And when you take the entitlement programs off the table, it becomes virtually impossible to cut government spending unless you're going to gut the military. And, you know, I don't think that's advisable. So you're in a situation where if you're not going to reform entitlement programs, and by reform, I mean deal with them going in the out years, not for the people that are right now retiring or soon to retire, but reform them, you know, it's unless you're going to do that, you're going to have rampant
John,
spending,
where,
which is
where
what we
is
have.
This discussion happening in the Republican Party right now?
Oh, there's
now.
A lot of us
I know
talking
it's
about
not being led by the president.
A lot of us are no, but a lot of us are talking about it.
But you actually control two branches of government here. You've got the United States Senate, and you got the White
well,
House. You even had the House.
We got half.
No, but you have leadership. You could be leading on this issue, but we're more interested in defending the president on personal non-bid, you know, contracts than addressing.
Well, that's not the fault of the Republicans that we're having this ridiculous impeachment talk. If that's the fault of the Democrats, Nancy Pelosi's inability to control her caucus. And the reason that we're all sucked into this impeachment impeachment morass is because Pelosi doesn't have control of her caucus, and we're not talking about issues that matter. We could be talking about spending, could be talking about infrastructure, could be getting these trade deals signed, the Mexican-Canadian trade deal. That needs to be taken up by Congress. They're not doing that. They're not doing anything except
cleaning up President Trump's mess. Yeah, and one of the messes that the president's created, John, that you have been critical of, well, I think almost the entire world, including most of the people inside the president's administration, are critical of him. John wants to weigh in on that. John, you're on the Mighty Mox and Overnight America.
Yeah, good show, Gate. You guys are all over the place. I don't know what time to tune in. You're all doing midnights and all kind
we're,
of.
We're like horse poop at a parade, John.
Yeah, let me ask you a question about the withdrawal of troops from Turkey or Syria, those type of situations.
Yep.
Is it plausible for the United States? I know they can't be everywhere and anywhere, but isn't this allowing encroaching of Iran and Russia or China influence in that area? And then if the United States doesn't stay in that area, which I don't know, they're just moving troops around. They said they're going to bring them home, and then they're going to keep them there. But if it's a lack of military presence by the United States, what is that going to create in the future down the road? Is it going to be more of this turbulent, you know, we have to go in there later, clean up the mess, or does Russia come in there and stabilize their position, and the United States can't be a buffer against other nations or other groups like ISIS to form or reform in that area? Thanks.
All right, yeah, we'll talk about it, John. Thanks for your call. I think John hit the nail on the head, actually. There are two schools of thought on the Republicans within the Republican Party as it relates to our presence in the world. You have one school of thought, and the president is closer to this camp. You'll find people like Rand Paul also in this camp that don't believe that the United States should be out there spread out all over the globe conducting military exercises and interventions, and that what we ought to be doing is putting America first and focusing on our own country and the rest of the world. You know, unless it affects our most vital national interest, we shouldn't be there. So that's one school of thought, and that is the school of thought that has driven, apparently, the president's decision to remove what was just hundreds of troops out of northern Syria. I and other Republicans believe that the world fundamentally is a better, safer place with United States leadership, and that if the United States isn't leading, somebody else will. In this case, in northern Syria, it's Turkey, it's Russia, it's Iran. John named the players. And, you know, and with a relatively small footprint, we had 1,000 troops there. They were all very special forces, very well-trained special forces, working with the Kurds, who were, at that time, our allies. That effort effectively eradicated the footprint, the land footprint of the caliphate, ISIS, in that region. They had, if you remember, in the Obama years, they had set up camp throughout Syria and Iraq, you know, into Libya. They had a large swath of land that they controlled and were functioning as a nation state. But when the United States came along and the Kurds came along, we wiped them out. And that was an effective maneuver. So what has happened by the taking of our 1,000 troops out of there and greenlighting the Turkish invasion of Syria, and that's what it is, you're allowing the Syrian government of Assad, who is a terrible actor, the Russians, who are very destabilizing in the region, and I think more significantly, Iran, to move into that vacuum that we have created and the vacuum that we have left. And, you know, Iran, they're trying to build a corridor, a land-based corridor, to be able to supply and arm Hezbollah, the radical terrorists who are Israel's mortal enemies. We have made that effort easier for them by virtue of what we have done here. Now, we are under a so-called ceasefire right now. There's still been some shooting. It's supposed to last until Tuesday, I think. But the whole predicate of the ceasefire is that the Kurds clear out of that 20-mile zone, which, you know, that's what Turkey wanted in the first place. So we basically said to Turkey, okay, if they clear out, you'll stop shooting. Turkey says, yeah, we'll stop shooting if they clear out. Well, the Kurds don't want to clear out. So I'm not optimistic that this ceasefire is going to amount to much.
Well, geez. I mean, just listening to you describe it, it is interesting, though. We're starting to see some of the Republicans stand up, Lindsey Graham leading the effort to say this is wrong. You know, John, the president had, by my count, didn't he have 3 generals who joined his staff when he first became president?
4.
4.
Remember General Flynn?
General Flynn. He went to jail.
He had a cup of latte, and then he left.
Yeah, then we have General Kelly, that was the chief of staff.
He was Homeland Security Director at that
McMaster
time.
McMaster?
Yep, H.R. McMaster, who was the Director of National Security.
And who will forget General James Mad Dog Mattis? I mean, the president built him up.
Secretary of Defense.
So, obviously, our first one leaves because he gets into legal trouble. Why did the other 3 leave?
Well, McMaster left because I think he was asked to leave. He and the president were not getting along well.
Over this particular issue,
no,
Syria?
No, McMaster was, I think it was stylistic more than anything else. The way he presented the daily national security briefings to the president was not the way the president wanted to receive it.
They had picture book?
They had a difference of opinion on some things, and he left. General Kelly left after he became the chief of staff, and I think that was a mutual decision as well. I think the president wanted him out. Mattis left at the end of 2018 because that was the first time the president indicated he wanted to withdraw our troops from Syria, and it was precisely this issue that we're now dealing with why Jim Mattis left as Secretary of Defense, because his ideas of what needed to happen and the president's were fundamentally at odds, and he didn't feel like he could serve the president by staying in that office because he disagreed. So that's why Jim Mattis left. And now none of these generals are there. We've got an acting Secretary of Defense now, mm-hmm. a brand new Director of National Intelligence, brand new National Security Advisor.
The very best people.
And I don't know. They may well be. I don't know these folks, but I mean, that's the situation. That's the situation as it finds us.
Hey, let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk a little bit more about this. And I've got another topic to get to in the next hour.
Oh, we're going to get off of politics next hour. I can't wait. And I hope you'll be with us when we talk about that right here on KMOX.
And the voice usually after that introduction is Ryan Recker. Ryan's got the night off tonight. So Hancock and Kelly are in studio. Rarely are we here. Anytime the sun is not up.
He's on vacation, isn't he?
Good for him.
He's going to be gone for a few days.
Oh, so there'll be some other folks sitting in over the next couple of days.
I think all week. So I think Big Bad Brad Young is going to be here tomorrow night.
Is that right? Brad Young.
Yeah.
I guess he'll be drinking some coffee as well. I had a little coffee this evening. This
you
is
did.
Not our normal shift. It's Hancock and Kelly. You can hear us on Friday mornings for sure on 8:30. And for Charlie Brennan, we'll take you all the way to 11 o'clock. And then, of course, should Charlie or Mark be unable to fulfill their duties, at any given time, Hancock and Kelly come in and we talk a little politics. We have a little bit of fun. We've been talking about the president of the United States today. I promise we're not going to spend the whole 3 hours talking about the president. I'm sick of talking about the guy. I do wonder, John Hancock.
We've got some great topics next
if
hour.
Perhaps
Radio Hall of Fame worthy topics.
Well, hello. Edward Murrow? Is
Edward
that the guy? Yeah,
buddy.
We could be nominated for something
you
like that.
You better believe it.
John, is this party now the party of Donald Trump? I mean, has the conservative party that I grew up studying in school and really paying attention to under Ronald Reagan and then later continued under both of President Bush's, is this now what the GOP is reflective of, the party of Donald Trump?
Yeah, I mean, that's what it is now. And it may remain very much like this. You may see it go back to a more traditional movement conservative party. I think that remains to be seen. But what I find really interesting about the state of politics right now is this wave of populism that is clearly present in the Republican Party. And I would argue that populism is driving a lot of the Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders passion on your side. And I, you know, it's because they're not traditional Democrats, either one of them.
No.
And I think clearly it's not the same people. But I think there's a lot of the same kind of populist us against them. We're against the establishment. I think a lot of that is out there driving it. And it's not necessarily a U.S. phenomenon. I think you're seeing this all over the world.
Right. Well, Boris Johnson, I mean, maybe one of the more consequential elected officials in the country right now. He's navigating the EU departure from Britain. Big news on Thursday. Britain winds up cutting a deal with the EU. Boris Johnson finally delivering an idea or a contract with the EU that then would have to go back upon approval from Parliament. If it was approved by Parliament, then it would go to the whole EU. The whole big sticking point, and this is a very 30,000-foot overview, but it was mainly related to the Northern Ireland.
Right.
Ireland border. Obviously, you have England and Ireland sharing the same island. The question was, how was customs and flow of goods, et cetera, et cetera. They came to that type of a compromise. They go back to Parliament, where Boris Johnson's going to be able to deliver what he finally thought was going to happen. And there was a requirement by Parliament that they go back and ask for a delay. And he got voted down on that. And so under his ministerial duties, he was to send a letter to the EU saying, hey, we're asking for an extension. We plan on moving forward with this, but we're asking for an extension. Sends that, John, does not sign that letter, but sends that to the EU. Then the same day, hour later, writes another letter to him saying, I wouldn't pay attention to my previous letter. So Boris Johnson really representing a populist movement as well. And That situation with the EU and Britain really started prior to Donald Trump.
Right.
And then the worldwide phenomenon continues then with Donald Trump. And we're starting to see.
It's kind of similar in many ways because most of the analysts looking at the Brexit vote as it was coming up were pretty confident that it was going to fail. And the polling was kind of indicating that it was going to fail. And then sure enough, it passed. Not passed narrowly, but it passed. And, that's a big deal to pull yourself out of the European Union. And they did it, and not just for economic reasons, but a lot of it had to do with immigration.
Totally about
that. And if you look at the debates we're having in this country, it has a lot to do with immigration. And so
there's a lot
of similarities between
totally.
The Brexit movement and the Trump movement
but,
in the U.S.
But populism on rise around the world. And you're right. I mean, Bernie and Elizabeth Warren now, Elizabeth Warren is now polling as the front runner in the Democratic primary.
I think Biden's done.
I don't believe Joe Biden's done. We're still 100 days away from Iowa. There's lots of game to be played. Voters are often engaged, especially the most passionate political voters are involved early. Those are your people who are your true believers. You're furthest on the political spectrum. So we're starting to see that. I think Joe Biden comes out of Iowa with a first place finish. He's in this race to go. That's going to be tough. We see Elizabeth Warren winning heavily. Now, I've spent a lot of time in Iowa myself. I worked on Mr. Gephardt's campaign, Congressman Dick Gephardt, from right here in St. Louis when he ran for president in 2004. And one of the things I learned about the Democratic electorate in Iowa, it's It's as wide and as varied as the entire country. There's a whole real big leftist wing up there, anti-war. Right. If you remember the war, the Gulf War was a big issue that was going on. You have a socialist bend in parts of Iowa. Then you also have the working class labor, farmer. Well,
Tom Harkin was a senator.
Tom Harkin. So Iowa, with a very diverse population out there as however, it relates to however, however what. Yeah, go
here's,
ahead.
Here's what I think is going to be a problem for Biden in Iowa. If you look at Biden's national polling numbers, the reason he is where he is, largely, not exclusively, but largely, is because he performs extremely well with African-Americans. And that is a major Democratic constituency in primaries, except not so much in
Iowa. Well, not in Iowa, no. Right. But isn't that interesting? Because there's Kamala Harris is in the race, an African-American.
Cory Booker.
Cory Booker, an African-American. Julian Castro. A Latino.
Right.
Pete Buttigieg, no. I mean, we've got two African-American candidates, but Joe Biden mopping up nationally as it relates to. Well, and I think that's probably mainly
Obama.
A lot to the credit to his ties to President Obama.
Yeah, I think there's no question about that. And he's always done well with African-Americans. And I thought maybe some of that would dissipate once this primary got rolling, but it really hasn't. And Warren's numbers are a little better, and I haven't really plumbed into the crosstabs on the Democrat side.
Would you even know what you're looking at?
I can geek out on that stuff, but I haven't really done it yet. But my suspicion is that, just given our national numbers, that Warren is performing better with African-Americans than she was early on.
Both she and Bernie are big as it relates to Medicare for All, which ridiculous. Nobody really has an understanding how it's going to pay. How that gets paid for.
Because they're not going to pay for it.
Number two, well, Mexico's going to pay for it. Number two is, you know, that there is a lot of folks who've bought into that thought process that we could do Medicaid for all. But then you have other Democrats like Joe Biden saying, hey, wait a minute. There's a lot of Americans out there, including those of my friends in organized labor, who like their health care. Yeah, there are some problems. It costs too much, and we need to be dealing with some of that. But to then take us all out of our existing healthcare process, our programs, and put us into Medicare for All is not going to be tolerable. Then you get a Sherrod Brown, John, guy who gets elected in a red state, who's kind of been the Paul Revere on this issue to the Democrats, saying this is a bullet to the Democratic Party. If this is our issue as we go to the next election, we're going to lose those mainstream, never-Trumper folks that are out there in the suburbs by not being able to communicate to them because we've got such a leftist idea.
Well, and you know, this is let me try this analogy out on you. So, you know, we've got some bad roads and bridges in this state, right? So a prudent policy would be, let's fix the bad roads and bridges. A stupid policy would be, let's repave everything.
Right.
And on this health care, do we have problems with health care policy? Yes, we do. But most people like their health care, so let's solve it for the people that don't. And it seems like that's pretty simple.
It is. Well, it's Hancock and Kelly. We got to step away. We'll be back after this on KMOX.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.